condo. You're listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar, the Human Serviette Radio Show. And that just was Bingo Gazingo with You're Out of the Computer. And joining me right now on the Nardwuar, the Human Serviette Radio Show is, well, who are you? Please, go ahead. Who are you?
I have a microphone, and my name is Tobias.
Hey, you've been a little while since it's been to CITR.
It's been yourself. 2.5 years.
Can you move a bit closer to the mic?
I'm in the mic.
Actually, there we go. That should work. Your
is this working better?
Not, oh, yeah.
There we go. Yes. Directional microphone. It's in my mouth now.
It's been a long time, hasn't it? Who are you, Tobias? Please, who are you?
Oh, my God. Who am I? I'm an expatriate Vancouverite who's since launched the pond to Montreal. I'm an ex-CITRite who used to be here much too often over 1997 to 2002. And wow, I have volume now. Who else am I? I'm not sure. I don't know how to describe myself anymore.
Well, you were Tobias Von Van Veen.
Von Vane. Von Vane.
And I still think that the mic is not working properly.
Is it not working?
No, hold on. Yeah, why don't you try grab that one?
Grab
for
the
a
other mic. We'll try dual microphone action.
Actually, yeah.
Hello.
There
Hello.
We go.
Oh,
yes.
This one's much better.
Yes, there
yes.
we go.
Yes, it sounds much nicer.
Now we've got that all connected up. And it's been a few years since you, Tobias, have been up at CITR Radio, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been at least 2.5, 3 years. And it's stunning me because everywhere here in UBC, there's condo developments. And I went to pull into the parking lot, and there's now a whole bus loop.
And what exactly do you do, and what did you do at CITR, and what are you going to do here?
Well, I did do a number of shows here. I was president for a number of years as well, and I did the news, and I used to yell out the weather. I also was involved in some radio coverage of protest action in 1997, which was rather interesting and fun. And what I'm going
to... Did you win,
to,
like, an award for that, too?
Right, we did. We won the National Campus Community Radio Association
You won, like, $1,000 for getting sprayed by pepper spray, right?
On air.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. With cell phones.
With cell phones. And, in fact, that's when you asked that brilliant question to Jean Chrétien.
Basically, pre-internet. Pre-internet.
Well,
it just seems so novel. Like because you had to rent cell phones.
We did. We had to
rent cell phones
and sort of borrow them off of our parents. And in fact, you know what? That was the sort of founding moment where indie media came out of. The whole indie media internet model of disseminated political coverage of events came out of CITR's APEC 1997 coverage.
Where you had to rent your cell phone. Now it seems so weird, doesn't it? Like renting a cell phone.
Well, now they're, like, disposable. You can get a disposable cell phone for long-distance calls in Europe.
Really?
Yes.
You just chuck it after?
You just chuck it.
But wait a second. Isn't that bad for the environment?
It's horrible.
There's like, all those warnings about, like, disposing the cell phone batteries, right?
In fact, do you know that you can now recycle your cell phone?
In what way? Just give it to somebody else?
Well...
And then they'll get brain damage? Ba-boom.
There's actually a company which will now start recycling your cell phones. You give them away, and it's like recycling paper.
That's very awesome.
Yeah.
You would know that there, Tobias.
I know.
Because you probably know a lot of that type of stuff, because you're really, quote, a renegade theorist and pirate. Now,
yes.
What theories are you renegade with, and what are you going to be playing here today on an Our Body Human Serviette radio show?
Well,
and what is a renegade theorist and pirate?
Yeah, what is it? Well, it's probably me. That's probably the answer for who am I. But, yeah, a renegade theorist is somebody who's, I think, maybe going through the academic system and not necessarily enjoying it, but nonetheless partaking in the various academic aspects to fund their lifestyle. And a pirate is actually a term which I give full credit to Anna Frizz, who is our ex-program director here, and she, for a long time, was Pirate Jenny.
I was thinking, handing your card, like, when you go through, like, security to, like, the States or through border
crossing,
etc.
I hide my business cards.
Yeah, I was wondering if somebody saw Pirate, if they would laugh at that.
Yeah, I hide my business cards, because on my business cards, kids, it says Renegade Theorist and Pirate.
Tobias, you're so into the tech. Like, you know about these disposable cell phones. Even your phone number is like 0010, the end of it.
I was very lucky.
Very tech, isn't it? 0010.
I was very happy. It was very digital and very binary.
Are we plugged into the same one there?
I have no... Yes.
If you want, you could plug into the other one so I don't yell at you.
That's okay.
If you want, plug into this one right over here.
Okay.
Tobias, actually, as he did mention, was the president of CITR a few years ago, and now you live in Montreal. Let's just clear that up. You're not back at CITR after being in Vancouver for a couple years. You're back in Vancouver after being in Montreal for a few years.
Indeed, I am now back in Montreal for a few years.
And then going to move back to Vancouver for a few years, right? Is this your home base? Is Vancouver your home base?
Actually, Montreal is now my home base. And I kind of split my time between Montreal, a little bit of Vancouver, but also primarily now Europe and New York. I'm really enjoying seeing the other side of the world.
I love the way also you really know about, you know, terms and stuff. You taught me about all those terms years ago.
Don't you remember that one show where you came in and you asked me, okay, what are all these names for electronic music? And I gave you this long list. And then I think you used it to describe what somebody wasn't doing.
Well,
you said, it's not going to be trance. It's not going to be techno.
Yeah, like you told me all these neat terms, like deep house. Is that one or is that wrong?
It's definitely a term.
What were those terms?
Oh, man, there's so many genres. The founding genres of electronic music, dance-based electronic music, are house and techno. Come out of Chicago. Chicago made house music, and New York and Detroit made techno music.
Windsor, Canadian.
And Windsor, yes, Windsor, absolutely. Richie Hawtin, Mr. Plastic Man himself.
Is he a cool guy or not?
He's a pretty cool guy. In fact, he's, you know, there's been, you know, several, you know, it's like punk. There's like several generations of music, and he's sort of one of the older generations, and he's gotten back in touch with a lot of the new laptop techno producers through the Mutech Festival in Montreal. There's been a lot more discourse.
AKA nobody else will speak to him, right?
Well, no, that's not true. He just became kind of ultra successful and a huge club DJ in Europe and so forth and so on, and kind of lost, you know, you sort of lose contact with the music that you're creating.
So kind of like when U2 hooked up with Bo Diddley or whatever.
Exactly, it was all downhill from there.
To get back to the roots, right?
Yeah, roots. But, you know, actually Houghton's, I think, more on the root tip, because, you know, electronic music never really exploded. I mean, it was sort of the mid-90s thing, but, I mean, it never took over. You know, I mean hip hop and R&B. You know, it's like all interesting forms of music. It kind of maintains its own energy and its own sort of network.
And that's what we're going to be playing today.
Mm-hmm. Today,
electronic music. You brought in some electronic stuff on your laptop.
Yes.
And you're very particular about stuff. I overheard you saying something like, "Yeah, I was at a gig last night, and how was it?" Well, it was pretty IBM-y.
IDM.
Oh, I thought you said IBM.
Oh, no, not IBM.
I thought you were going, like, it was very IBM-y. Because you're into the laptop, right? There's been laptop battles in Vancouver. Laptop, like actual laptops.
I've heard about that.
Actual laptop battles. And I thought, like, the laptops were kind of like Macintosh battles. But by you mentioning IBM sucks, that maybe there might be.
Oh, no.
Is it mainly Macintosh?
IDM. IDM.
Does Bill Gates or whoever owns whatever the hell Macintosh, Steve Jobs or whoever the hell.
Steve Jobs.
Are there any home computers? Like, I mean, is electronic music basically right wing?
Wow, that's a crazy connection. Do you know what? I have an entire paper that discusses fascism and electronic music.
Well, that's what I was wondering about, because all the stuff you're using is basically made by capitalists, right?
Not only
are there
that.
Any you know, like they have fair brew coffee or whatever.
Do you have a fair brew laptop I can purchase?
Are there any alternatives for people out there that don't want to buy the IBM? And do IBM suck compared to Mac?
Well, you know, we've got to pull like a reverse, because first, IDM means intelligent dance music. So that was the show last night. Somebody was playing IDM, which is an early 90s term for kind of like broken beats and experimental sounds. And it came out ambient music. But the whole laptop battle thing, yeah, you know what? There's a lot of Apple Macintosh users. But you know what? There's also a growing contingent of people who buy like a standard PC laptop and then use open source software. So the software is actually collectively created. So that's where you have this incredible networked collective generation of software that's not owned by any company. So there's all these people using software tools that aren't owned by anybody. They're like collectively made among like a whole
bunch of
programs.
But are people afraid to use that because they're not proven? And are there any DIY computers? Like,
there are DIY.
Hewlett Packard, or like bringing back the old school ones, like having the shell of the old one but having a cool thing inside.
You could definitely do it. I've definitely seen it. I mean, you know, laptops are a little harder to get to kind of do that with, but people do it with home systems all the time. But what's more exciting isn't so much the hardware as it is the software, because the skill set to program software, you know, I'm a horrible programmer. I can never
do it. Yeah, but come on, I still think it's weird, though, to have a Macintosh up there. It's like those people saying that PETA is, you know, PETA, you know, ethical treatment of animals or whatever, like, you know, like saying that PETA is like the way to go in and wearing a fur coat.
I don't know if it's that bad. I mean, you know, if you look at any other musician, they are holding a certain type of guitar and drum set and so on, and they're pretty.
Because I remember the rock and roll band Fugazi. When I saw them once, I was looking at their clothing, and they had ripped off every single label that was on their clothing. Like, it might have been Levi's, but they ripped off the Levi's label. But in all fairness to you, Tobias,
so that's kind of hypocritical.
I don't know if they did or not, but you did cover up your Macintosh logo on your laptop.
Absolutely.
You have here today, and you're going to be playing some laptop music, some electronic stuff that you've created.
What I'm going to play next for you, I will be playing some of my own experimental material, but what I want to start off with is actually something which is considered electronic music but was made with a guitar.
Okay, a bit of background on that, please.
This is Christian Fenez, and Fenez is a Viennese artist. He's part of a group called Mego from Vienna, which has been exploring noise for years and years. Now, he's considered a laptop artist, but ironically enough, he played guitar in bands all throughout the 80s, right up into the mid-90s, didn't even start working with a laptop until much later. And all of his early work is still guitar treatment. All of his new work is still guitar treatment. He just uses a laptop to actually do these very complicated treatments to it. Instead of having a whole rack of delay pedals and hardware stuff, he's just got it all in software now.
So he's kind of like Diet Coke then.
Oh, it's not like Diet Coke. No, laptops are vicious machines.
No, I meant like he's into rock and roll, which is like Coke, and then Diet Coke is kind of like the step down, the laptop version,
no,
right?
It's not.
It's like Bob Dylan going electric. But it's a mixing, though. People that are guilty or whatever. People that are guilty for liking electronic music can like this because it has guitars in it, right?
Yeah, you know, that's probably true. I was trying to create some kind of, you know, crossover lead-in with your audience. So I could be like, wow, listen to this stuff. We call it electronic music, but actually
My audience. This is your audience. This is your audience. Because as approach 4 o'clock there, Tobias, that was the traditional time between 4 and 5
right.
No, of the noise show.
Right, the noise show.
For years and years, the people listening to CITR between 4 and 5 are used to noise, the noise show.
Yes, I did the noise for years with
So how dare you belittle all those people that have been listening to the noise show over and over and over again? So this isn't quite noise, then, what we're going to be playing.
It's noisy. It's definitely noisy. But you know what? Noise has become much more complex recently. It's not just feedback.
Yeah, we'll get into that, won't we?
Yes.
And you didn't say you're a turntablist, did you?
I'm also a turntablist.
Because people hate that term, don't they? Don't people hate that term, turntablist?
Oh, no. I like the term, personally. I think it's a great
term. What about DJ, like turntablist? Like, it's like isolating it so much. Like, didn't those old school rappers and stuff that they were into that, you know, DJs, it's just like, they love DJing. Like, why isolate it like that?
Well, I think it's more to distinguish what you do with turntables as an art form. Like, for example, you can take 8 years of piano lessons.
But isn't it cooler to call, like, Kid Koala a DJ than a turntablist?
No, because a DJ is the same guy as in a strip bar down at the Marble Arch.
Except if you go all the way to Jamaica. In Jamaica, remember, they had it reversed.
No, then they're selectors.
Right, exactly, because the DJ was the actual singer, right? And the selector was the actual DJ.
The selector, yes. Actually, the DJ was
the
MC.
Yeah,
the
DJ was the MC, singer, yes. Yeah. So all these different terms. But I still think turntablist is a weird name. I've heard people come down on it. Me, personally, I don't know anything about it. But I just don't
You're coming down on my term.
No, I just don't think it's that proper, though. But you do pioneer terms, though, Tobias. News. Like on CITR, you called it news.
Yeah,
N-O-O-Z-E.
Yes.
Even have like on your resume, on your website.
That's
people don't criticize you for spelling it that way,
no.
Do they?
And actually, the noise show is called N-O-I-Z-R.
The news. The news. And also the way you spell your name, Tobias, with those greater than and less than things. What's the preoccupation with the greater than and less than symbols? You have those everywhere.
Greater than and less than symbols?
Yeah, you have Tobias and you have that thing like they have an email. You know those?
Oh, I know.
You overuse those. Those are everywhere, all over your website, Tobias.
You know,
do you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. That's
you do know what I'm talking about.
I do. That actually comes out with a whole bunch of stuff we were doing in the mid to late 90s with rave culture. And it was just a whole aesthetic that we were interested in, which comes out of Afrofuturism.
Well, greater than, less than. What are those things? What's going on? They're everywhere. Like, it's extra work. To me, when I'm typing stuff, to have to do that, it's extra work. It's almost like an art, isn't it? Like, putting a bit, it's like a little,
sure.
It's like drawing a little doodle or something.
It's kind of visual poetry for it to signify certain sonic sounds within language.
As brought to you by Tobias.
Do you know why? It's because there's no lyrics in what I do.
And right now we're going to play something that you've brought in. Again, if you could tell the listeners what
so
we're going to hear. And this
so
is from your laptop.
This is from a laptop.
Your Macintosh laptop.
Absolutely, my Apple sticker laptop. And this is Finez off Instrument 1 from the very early 90s, recently repressed on Mego.
And you're listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, with Tobias doing some DJing here on the Nardwuar to Human Serviette Radio Show. And what did we just hear there, Tobias? A fellow CITRer, a fellow Canadianer,
right. A fellow
Tim Hecker.
Mr. Tim Hecker, ex-Vancouverite, now living in Ottawa, Ontario, in his comfortable federal government job after doing an MAA in political science at Concordia University, and a huge Kevin Shields My Bloody Valentine fan, along with Finesse, whom we just heard beforehand.
And Finesse is not really ambient. And a bit of background, what are you playing here today? What are you playing here today?
What's that
Finesse is not ambient, is he?
No, definitely not really. My God, we have a phone ringing in the studio and it's loud. I can't hear anything. Quick, Nardwuar, say something while I'm plugging in my headphones.
Can you hear me? You can hear me now.
Yeah, like forget it.
Through the actual air.
Forget this.
I mean, how tech are you?
I'm way too tech.
Like, how tech? Like, you can actually, like, are you getting...
My cell phone takes photos.
Like, but you're getting wrapped up in it all, aren't you? Like, for instance, like, you can actually hear me. You can actually hear me without the headphones.
I know.
Without the headphones, but you need the headphones.
But you need the headphones because then you hear your own voice, and it's all about hearing your own voice on the radio.
And we began there with Finesse, as I was saying, with Finesse.
Yes,
Mr. Finesse, and it was ambient. Explain the ambient part of it all.
Well, I wouldn't call him ambient. I'd say he was just interested in exploring guitars and seeing what guitars could do in terms of this sort of noise pattern.
And where's he from?
He's from Vienna, Austria.
And he has a bit of guitars happening there. And was he one of the first guys to do the guitar thing with this sort of genre?
Well, he definitely, I think, set out a distinct sound from, like, a number of other people. There were a number of other people, though, in his collective, including PETA, including Hecker, not Tim Hecker, but just Hecker, and a bunch of other people who also do very interesting processing of sounds. And they work with any number of things, field recordings, microphone recordings, instruments, sounds which are generated purely within a laptop from sine waves, and other types of strange electronic forms, which are literally just the sound of electricity.
Now, if people want to get a hold of some Finesse, is that available in local shops and stuff? Is he on vinyl? Where is he spun? Like, do people spin him in clubs?
Not
do they
really.
Dance to it?
No, absolutely not at all. I mean, this is listening music. You, like, go to a show, and everybody stands around or lies down and listens. And usually they're very loud shows. Some of the shows are, like, 130 decibels.
And how about Tim Hecker? How does he perform?
Very similar environment. Very similar. I mean, it's just like going to see a band, you know, like you stand around and you listen to it, and you know, it's kind of the same vibe as post rock when you like go to see a post rock, you know, band in a club somewhere.
How did you get involved with all this? I know by doing the noise show here on CITR
Absolutely.
Radio, but how did you jump into this? Because you've been going to school for a long time, haven't you, Tobias?
It's never
going to
end, Nardwuar.
And you've been doing some fun things with school.
Yes.
How could you recommend to people to have a fun time in school? Like, I remember I was once told to take like, you know, classes that don't have final exams and stuff, where you play hacky sack. Like, what are some examples that you've taken, that you've had some fun with? Because I noticed you wrote an essay. You wrote an essay, something like how to watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
You're right.
Like, you wrote an essay on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Like, how to watch it. How to watch Buffy. And you got, how did you do on that? Did you get a good grade?
Actually, that entire paper wasn't even for a class. It was for a talk that I did here at UBC many years ago with a number of professors from my English department at the time.
But it still kind of is associated with it. I'm sure the professors will influence it and gave you a good grade. But what are your hints for getting through school? You can have some fun. Because you said that Tim Hecker's got a good job there, too.
You know, getting through school, the trick through getting through school is just to realize that the sort of hierarchy and institution which you encounter can be navigated funnily. I mean, for one thing, take courses which interest you.
But what have you done? What sort of papers have you done that you are interested in? Like, have you done stuff on raves? Like, what have you done?
Give
the people out there a sampling of what you have done.
What I have done. In my undergraduate year, I started writing about rave culture. And it was very difficult to write about something which you're in. Because as an academic, you're supposed to have some degree of objectivity. So there's a weird question.
And how can they grade you, too? Because the professors really know about it? Like, how much can you lie?
You could lie extensively, however...
And you did!
No. In the end, it's going to be to your detriment to lie, because other people are going to realize it, and your peers are going to make fun of you and ridicule you. And once you've been ridiculed as an academic, it's all over.
But what topics did you go after?
I really went after the study of
like, give me some
culture.
Paper titles.
Paper titles?
Yeah.
Oh, well, my paper titles today look like software titles. So I have paper titles that are like Code and Counter-Strike version 2, or the Reverb Engine Mix 4.1.
And how about some old school paper titles from Tobias? What did you
old
have?
I have paper titles called It's Not a Rave, Fascism in Politics and Rave Culture. You know, paper titles like that. Basically, I became very interested in studying what was happening now and trying to understand exactly the conditions of our contemporary culture and how I could then bring an analysis of what is happening around me back to it in order to do different things with it. Because academia can give you incredible tools to look around and get a sense of what's going on. Just like CITR, just like journalism. It can give you a sense of the world. So if you can bring that back to something, that's when academia is powerful. That's when you can transform other areas of life. It's when academics are stuck in the ivory tower and they don't go back out, that then you have this sort of bureaucratic institution. And that's what I hate. That's what I detest about the university.
How do you know how to judge something? I.e., how do the professors know if you're right or you're wrong? You said you can lie quite a bit. How do people know?
I wouldn't want to lie.
How do people know what is noise? Like 10 years ago, at this very time, it was the noise show between 4 and 5.
A lot of this.
Yeah, what is noise? What is noise? Because to me, noise was, you know, this. But you guys, when you did the noise show, it was a bit of a sellout noise show.
It was a sellout.
I'm revealing this for the first time. I've been harboring this.
What do you mean? It wasn't a sellout.
I've been harboring this resentment for years. Well, I don't mean that. Totally.
Sellout noise.
But isn't sellout noise where there's a bit of a beat to it? Like, I don't think there should be a beat in noise.
I don't think we ever had a beat to a noise show.
But there kind of is. Sometimes it's too musical. Like, what is noise? What is noise?
You know, there's a really cool guy called Jacques Attali who wrote a book called Noise, The Political Economy of Music. And he says that noise is determined in each epoch of society as that which isn't music. So it's always changing. Because right now, like, we can listen to music which actually is quite noisy. I mean, this would have been noise 100 years ago. People would have been like, wow, that's rad. I mean, look at 60s rock when it came about. You know, like, everyone was like, this is noise. It's crap. It has no musicality to it.
But you say there are rave fascists. Are there noise fascists? Like myself, that say, you're too musical. You know, it's got to be straight up noise.
What we were doing with the noise show is actually playing more of the studio. We were more interested in radio art, which was using the entire radio studio.
But isn't radio art just a kind of a lame Eastern name? Like, that doesn't sound so sellout. Like, why can't you just call it noise? Why call it art? Why call it art at all? It's noise. Like, radio art just sounds so, you know, like turntablism, radio art. Those are terrible names. Like, DJ and noise. I mean, that's the way to go after it.
Those are the names for Nardwar kids. We're now going to officially rename all turntablists to DJs and noise. Radio art to noise. You know what? Radio art has a whole history, actually. It has a whole 100-year history of artists trying to get involved within the radio industry before it became corporate takeover. And so they tried to set up radio stations. They had these dreams of two-way radio stations back in the early 20s and 30s. Like André Breton, like the founder of Surrealism, was all completely interested in the idea that you could have a two-way radio station.
I mean, people going back and forth. I mean,
somehow. He just had this idea because he didn't like radio stations because they're one way. It's only sending it out one way.
Did he ever try it?
Yeah, they like did all these experiments where they have like radio stations in different cities and they would try to send stuff back and forth at the same time. But then everything became regulated and then like everything else. You know, just like the internet. I mean, look at the internet today. You know, it has all these wonderful dreams of sharing and collective action and this sort of unfettered space without regulation, and now it's being clamped down.
And you said the theremin began as a noise object. The theremin, now that they use for lots of cool top 40 John Spencer-ish type stuff.
You're right.
It began with the noise dudes. Oh, sorry, the radio. Art dudes.
It began with Louis Theremin. Actually, I don't know how he even invented. I don't quite know the story of how he invented the theremin, but it was quickly picked up by a number of avant-garde artists. But it was also picked up by orchestras. Like for a while, like the theremin became part of the modernist orchestra up until about 1960.
But the avant-garders were the first guys to embrace it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. As well as later avant-garders, like the whole New York 70s scene really embraced it, like Laurie Anderson.
And there's different things about noise too, or radio art. Like, you're the composer, and you're also kind of like the electrician. You're the guy that makes it. Like, there's no middlemen. There's nobody that kind of plays it. Like, you do it all yourself, right?
Kind of. I mean, it depends what sort of gear that you're working with. You might have to buy stuff.
But like in the old days, it was sheet music, and then somebody played it for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody actually had to buy the instruments or whatever to play it on.
Yeah.
But now you write the sheet music, you make the instruments, you actually perform it.
Are you actually making the instruments, though? I mean, we've got our laptops and, you know, turntables.
Well, pretty much, because it's already... You made it because you bought it. This is, like, already done, right? Because you can't really make it.
This is complex.
Yeah,
I don't know where we're going.
Yeah, because you can't really make the computer because you claim you have to buy from the corporations.
Yes, it's absolutely impossible to make a piece of hardware computer. You know, the new forms of music which require this sort of this technicality and this level of technology are absolutely implicated within broader systems. It's totally changed the way that this music has a politics.
Well, in what way have laptops improved since you were here at CITR a few years ago?
Have laptops
improved? What improvements have there been? Yeah, like what are you able to do now that you couldn't do before?
Laptops are almost incredibly stable now. Like any modern laptop now won't crash. Crashing was a major issue. The next issue was sound quality. There were still issues with sound quality in terms of sound cards. Now you can have USB and FireWire sound cards, so it sounds excellent. The next problem was processor speed. They were too slow or clunky or so on. So basically the whole machine has become fast enough, light enough, small enough, and sound quality enough. You can start using it to process multiple sounds at once.
And noise has been going on for years. Did noise start when the caveman threw the rock in the lake? What is the caveman throwing the rock in the lake thing, Tobias?
I think you're right. In fact, I think you're...
What am I alluding to? The caveman throwing the rock in the lake?
You are alluding
to... That was the first tune, right?
Robert Filou, who said... the Fluxus artist who said that art was born some 7.5 million years ago when somebody dropped a sponge in a bucket of water.
I thought it was a rock. I thought it was caveman.
Well, yeah, it would have been some hominid...
A sponge in a bucket of water. So they actually have the actual date then that art began.
Yeah, which is January 17th.
What year?
Well, approximately several million years ago.
But did they have sponges back then? Was this like a...
Well, a sponge is actually a natural animal.
I thought sponge in the bucket, I was kind of imagining like Shakespearean times, maybe like the guy cleaning the floor at the theater, dropped it in.
You know, this would have been like a natural sponge. I mean, like maybe it was even an undried sponge.
And you were mentioning it goes way back there. Well, the guy Luigi Russolo.
Yeah, Luigi Russolo. The infamous Luigi Russolo, who's an Italian futurist, who hung out with F.T. Marinetti, who's a friend of Mussolini back in like 1910. And the futurist...
That doesn't sound too cool.
They were very interesting. Italian futurism was...
But Mussolini didn't seem like he was too good of a guy.
Well, he was a dictator. I mean, he was a ruthless dictator. But on the other hand, he was... You know, this is back in the time when fascism was an acceptable political party up until about 1930. You know, you had the communists, the fascists, they fought each other on the streets, and democracy was failing. You know, that was sort of the state of Europe at the time. In any case, the futurists were very interested in new technologies, so they uncritically, and this is the problem with them, embraced cars, driving fast, trains, aeroplanes, modern machine guns. They loved World War I, because for them it was the ultimate celebration of modern warfare.
And Luigi Russolo used cannons? Was he the guy that used cannons?
He used cannons, he used guns.
No, cannons with music.
Yes, he actually made orchestras out of machines. He actually built his own machines, he called them the Intuono Rumori, and he built these orchestras out of strange machines that made clacking sounds and grinding sounds and winding them up, and he's almost been forgotten within the history of music.
Why did this stuff go out of favor? Like, why didn't it keep going on? Because
it was never in favor, really. I mean,
if people weren't into it then, it sounds like it was pretty good.
It was good, and people came, and it was sort of an avant-garde thing, but he never gained a lot of recognition, even outside of Italy. I mean, maybe a bit of Britain. He actually fled Italy. He turned against the fascists and fled to Britain, from what I understand.
But thankfully, some of his recordings still survive.
Yes.
And here's some raw noise. Now, we're not sure when this is from, are we?
No. But it would have been sometime between 1950 and 1935.
So basically like 1920s noise. And what is this? Do we know? We found this little snippet. And so this is Luigi. Maybe a bit of background again for the people out there.
Futurist from the early 20th century, Luigi Russolo and the Art of Noise.
1930s, 1920s noise.
Which is the name of his book. It's called The Art of Noises.
On CITR
101.9 FM. Thank you.
again, you're listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show with Tobias in live on the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. And what did we just hear there, Tobias? Please, could you elaborate?
That was My Bloody Valentine, classic Kevin Shields. And
that was an example of something.
That was an example of the connection between guitar processing and contemporary electronic music.
And before that, some
Luigi Russulo. Oh,
which was an example of some old school noise, like 1920s noise.
Yeah.
But you were saying the clip that I picked out, like I'm talking about you being a sellout by playing two musical noise. I actually played some pretty sellout Luigi type stuff, didn't I?
It definitely had rhythm. But see, at the time, you had to...
It was quite musical, wasn't it?
It was musical. And like you had to sort of use some music structure to break away from it. And you could definitely hear that weird explosions of howling sound coming.
So it did get weird towards the end, but it wouldn't be as weird as seeing this guy live. What was sort of the stuff like when you saw this guy live back in the day, in the 1920s?
You know, back in the 1920s, when I was a young un, you know.
Well, from what you've read, because we know you're a Welsh scholar, and again, you were Tobias, and you're going to be doing a lot of this stuff at the Lotus, aren't you, coming up next week, next Wednesday?
I'm actually DJing Wednesday at the Lotus at the Big Trouble night. And this is an interesting night because it's what's called a mashup night. This is like DJs going back to their roots and essentially spinning whatever they'd like to and mixing together genres and styles that don't necessarily mix together all that well.
But going back to academia, Luigi, like what sort of things were happening at his concerts? You were saying there was lots of stuff going on, there was wheels turning.
You'd have all these strange machines that are being wound up and crazy sounds coming out of it and people hitting objects and hitting bells and like with hammers and nails and guns and cannons going off and machine guns. I mean, a lot of times the audience would either leave or take off or a riot would start. I mean, you know, it was a huge spectacle.
Caller, are you there?
Yeah, thanks, Nardwuar.
Go ahead to Tobias here. You had a question about the guitar treatment.
You bet. I was really enjoying this segment you're doing today, and I'm a software guy myself, so this topic is absolutely fascinating for me.
What do you think of laptops these days?
I think they're pretty damn cool, and by the way, I am a full-on open-source advocate.
Very nice.
I just love seeing the stuff out there. It's incredibly powerful, and it's unstoppable.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
Are there any alternatives to Mac or PC?
In terms of hardware?
Well, in terms of hardware.
Hardware is difficult. I mean, do you know any caller, like any actual open-source communities creating open-source hardware?
In the embedded world, there are some. There's actually
true.
Some open-source designs for microprocessors and circuit boards and that kind of stuff. But really, hardware has become so commoditized that you need to build 10 million of them at once to make any sort of business case for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would take like taking over like a Taiwanese factory or something.
Yeah, it's much more difficult than software. Like software, it's just bits in thin air, right? Like hardware, it's actually a physical thing that you ultimately have to pay money for.
Mm-hmm.
But so my question was on the topic of using guitars as a source for electronic music. Back a few years ago, I listened to a lot of Fripp and Eno, and I was wondering how that the stuff that those guys did, like with Frippertronics and earlier stuff, fits in with the history that you're describing.
And we played My Bloody Valentine right there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we just played some My Bloody Valentine. You know, Frippertronics, you know, Brian Eno is actually a huge force within the history of electronic music. He's crossed so many genres. His ambient music from the 70s is amazingly influential in terms of loops and tones. And it's so influential, too, for industrial music in terms of Nurse with Wound. And like Frippertronics, also Plunderphonics, like John Oswald, totally,
that's right.
This is totally a different tangent, but a lot of those people who are doing things out of the 70s and the 80s have provided the sort of conceptual framework, I think, for a lot of artists today to start working with different technologies.
Neato.
And John Oswald is going way out there now these days, isn't he? Like, he's everywhere, isn't he?
Yeah, he was at Mutech at a talk last year. He was a very interesting man.
And what was he doing now? Because back then he was getting sued. Back then in the era of the noise show.
He probably is still getting sued. I he didn't talk much about exactly what he's up to at the moment. Actually, do you know caller?
I'm afraid not. But I did have one more question. Little band I came across recently, don't know a lot about, but Lawskill.
Lossil is Scott Morgan from Vancouver. In fact, it's very interesting. He was in a number of bands here throughout the early 90s.
Meet Daisy.
Was he? Sparrow and stuff like that, I think.
Yeah. And he's gone on to produce some very beautiful and eloquent sort of minimalist techno-dub music. So it's a musical and rhythmic and like so on, but very understated. And
I picked up First Narrow's, the latest CD.
Yes.
And I understand from visiting his website that he also collaborates with some visual computer-generated art stuff.
Hmm.
So he's got some links on his site that seems to combine his music with some interesting flash animations and so on,
mm-hmm.
Both interactive and non-interactive stuff. And I know that he and these guys have played around town every now and then, but I'd love to see one of those shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, definitely keep an eye out, because he's sort of a part of a crew that you'll see, for example, often at the New Forms Festival, which happens here every year, which is a very popular sort of, Vancouver grassroots festival for a whole number type of music.
How about Tim Hecker, caller? Are you aware of Tim Hecker? Because he's from, he lived in Vancouver for a little while.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
I don't know Tim.
He's also quite excellent. I mean, like, Lossil's on Cranky, which is a very interesting crossover, but Tim Hecker toured with Pan American. And one of Tim's friends is Mitchell Abiyama.
We played some Tim Hecker earlier on in the show.
How could
you explain Tim Hecker to the caller, just in case it's
Tim Hecker. Well, Tim Hecker is kind of like taking My Bloody Valentine and adding in a bit more ambient music and drawing it out. Although Tim's later work is all like sampling Van Halen and like turning it into like these textural kind of soundscapes. It's absolutely stunning work. It's very innovative.
Yeah, great.
Well, thanks for phoning in, caller. Anything else you want to add to the people out there at all?
Well, I just, you guys, download Mozilla, Firefox, whatever. Do not use Microsoft platforms. You're getting sucked into
the pit of evil.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a political statement, but really, you got to use open source software mm-hmm. and promote it with your friends as mm-hmm. much as you can.
Do you use PD? For object music composition? I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent here. I'm just curious.
Oh, actually, no. I'm really not a composer myself. Okay. I'm just a software developer.
Well, just for the audience, there's a really excellent program for Linux open source called Pure Data, which is object-oriented software programming. Now, this is wild out there stuff. But basically, this allows you to do very complicated processes on sound.
Oh, cool.
And it's all open source.
I'd have to check that out.
Yeah. I don't want to keep you, caller, and quiet, but just curious, could you give me a bit of background on the open source? How long has it been around, and how does one jump into it? Like, if somebody wants more info on it, like myself, who knows nothing about that sort of stuff.
Well, my take on open source is that it has actually been around for decades. Essentially, you can go back to the 70s when you would have hobbyist computer users group in Silicon Valley and elsewhere springing up, and just a bunch of computer geeks with soldering irons sharing their little weekend projects together. And that is kind of the essence, sort of a grassroots sharing of ideas. And
yeah, you can definitely also go to the, for example, there's the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which was one of the first sort of organizations to push open source software and alternatives to copyright. So I think they're at EFF.org, the Electronic Frontier Foundation. I think there's actually even a website for opensource.org, which will point you in a number of amazing directions to get a hold of free software. If you're a programmer, you can actually volunteer your time and skills toward one of these projects. And they're worldwide. They're global. These are global networks of people who have alternatives to essentially capitalist product.
Yeah, it's all based on trust and the sharing of ideas with your neighbors and friends all over the world.
Well, thank you very much, caller, and thank you, Tobias. Keep on rocking in the free world, and doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Doot-doo.
And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and The Tech Show with Tobias.
This is the technical Nardwar.
A.K.A. the Nardwar, the Human Serviette Radio Show. Actually, if you have any technical computer questions, please phone up,
822-247-UBC-CITR. We will not troubleshoot your internet connection.
Yes, just as we're not allowed to give medical advice over the radio. We aren't allowed to give any computer advice, but please phone up anyways. 604-822-2487 UBC CITR. What do you have queued up right now,
talked to Brian.
I'm going to play
on an ongoing history of electronic music on an Nerdwriter Human Survey Advice Show.
I'm going to throw in my own history now. This is going to be myself and Thomas Phillips. We're going to play just an excerpt because it's a 25-minute recording of a live performance that we did several months ago.
It's something you did.
Yes, yeah, something I did.
Any visuals?
No, there were no visuals to the performance. In fact, it was held in a completely dark room.
Okay, so
absolutely pitch black.
It was. Did people complain about no visuals?
No, it was completely silent. Everybody came in and sat on the floor. And the performance ended. This is very important. The performance ended.
How did they know that you were there? Like, did you even have to be there? If it was pitch black. I mean, why would you even be there? Because they couldn't see you.
Oh, but because it's about hearing. This is actually about music, just for the sake of music.
But why did you even have to go?
Because this is live. This is improvised.
But you're not there. Oh, you were doing some live stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Then.
Oh, yeah. This is like a completely improvised electronic performance. And no, it had a script. We scripted it. But we performed off of our laptops in such a way that basically stuff could, you know, screw up. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this is improvised and very live electronic music. Because the question of what constitutes the live when you're working with software is a big dilemma. You know, because, you know, you can just press play like I'm doing now and an MP3 comes out. But, you know, that's not a live performance.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. Like,
it's hard to
tell.
For
instance, that beatboxer, Rizal, I interviewed him and I got confused because he does beatboxing with his mouth type thing.
He's quite
but
excellent.
He also performs with a guy on a turntable and the guy on the turntable makes noises. And I find it hard to tell who's doing what. He said, well, you have to go see me live and you can tell. But on rec, it's hard to tell who's doing what. So how can you tell what's live here from what we're going to be playing? And what were you playing? What were you playing samples of? What can people listen for?
Well, actually, you know, oh, you totally confused me. What are we playing coming up, this next track?
What's on the track that
what's
we're
on
playing?
The track?
What are some of the samples? And what was the very first sample ever? Who was the first person to do a sample?
That's a good question. I have no idea. I really have, you know, because that would come down to, well, what is the, probably Thomas Edison.
In what respect?
Well, he was the very first person to put anything onto recorded media. That's a sample.
Is that a cop-out answer?
It's not a cop-out answer. If you think about sampling, I mean sampling is the moment when the process of citation or quotation, putting quotation marks around something, was formalized into a technology, at which point we had recorded media. Then you could give it to somebody else.
Okay, so we're going to be playing something that you did live.
This is live, and none of the sounds come from anywhere else. It's not sampled. This is all generated. This is generative sound. The sounds are being generated by laptop processes, by processes of electricity.
And this is Tobias on the Nerdwriter to Human Serviette radio show.
Thank you.
And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nerdwater Human Serviette Radio Show. And we have Tobias in here playing a lot of computer music, which actually is being played by your actual laptop, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's not being produced live. Now, however, that is a recording.
But it was kind of being produced live, because what is live? Because remember, you were hitting play, and maybe people could hear some of that. The noises of you were trying to get that MP3 to start up, right? That could be considered live there.
I think it's a cop-out, actually. I think for a performance to be live off a laptop, it has to be able to fail. There has to be a point where something bad can happen, really bad.
And did anything bad happen in what we just played there? Because that was you live doing a performance.
Do you know how this performance ended? We boiled tea. So the actual recording that we have doesn't capture the performance, because 20 minutes in, we had several teapots, you know, electric teapots that we plugged in, and then the tea started boiling, and it was a very quiet performance at the end, so the sound of the boiling tea was just as loud as the sound, and then I poured tea and gave a tea to everyone in the audience.
You're really taking it to another level, aren't you, Tobias?
Well,
including to the opera. Now, you somehow got, like, the Montreal Opera involved in your adventures.
Yeah, about a month ago, also with Thomas Phillips, who's an excellent artist. And actually, the piece you just heard is on an album called If Not Winter, which is out on Andor Records out of Seattle. Yeah, we just did a piece with the Montreal Opera, part of a program with the SAT, the Society for Arts and Technology, which is a large multimedia gallery space that I work at in Montreal. We did a piece with the opera as part of their techno opera.
Are they pretty open to that type of thing? Can anybody go in there and do it?
The SAT, the opera? Yes, actually. If you are in Montreal and you sort of hang out there, you can become part of what's called the Mix Sessions community, which is a community of DJs and VJs and artists who work with digital technologies.
How about the actual opera? How hard is it to get involved with the opera?
I don't know about
like,
the
could
opera.
You go in there and, like, subvert them from within?
You know, the opera is a very interesting institution right now in Montreal. They're actually looking for ways to connect with a younger audience. So they saw this as some opportunity of, like, hooking up, like, you know, the new electronic music with the opera and seeing what would happen.
And they, you came in?
We came in, and the opera that we had to work with, because it was part of their program, was Richard Strauss's Ariadne of Naxos, which is a very modernist opera from the early 20th century that pastiches, very modernist experimental opera with old Baroque 17th century opera, and that's the point. And the whole point of the opera is that it's anti-capitalist. There's like the story is about a patron who's funding the opera and is screwing up the opera being written within the opera, and it's kind of this Quentin Tarantino mise-en-scene thing, and the opera itself is a little boring because it's a little polemic. But what's fascinating about it is, like, the temporal structure, which is like Pulp Fiction or something. It keeps jumping back and forth between different times. So we took that and we thought, what's the early history of electronic music? And we went back and we did some research and we found the futurists and we found music concrets, which came out of France, which is all these people playing objects with microphones. And we thought, okay, we're going to take old opera records from the beginning of the 20th century, the original recordings of Strauss. We're going to play them back with the singers singing. We're going to cut the records and burn them and treat them. And we're going to run the entire thing through laptops that are processing it live. The entire thing, we had a score. We actually created a score. We rewrote bits of the opera. And then it was like, okay, we have 10 minutes to do this type of improvisation. So the entire thing was extraordinarily live. In fact, we never got it right in the rehearsal.
Why did you need the laptop?
Because the laptops were acting as giant mixing consoles. So we'd have two opera singers coming into the laptop and the turntables and a number of samples. And then we'd be manipulating them with software.
Who is Edgar Varese?
Ooh, Varese. Edgar Varese. He's another one of the founding father. Oh, my God, founding father. What a patriarchal term.
Is he OG electronic music
guy?
Yeah,
he's OG. You know, along with Pierre Henri, who's the guy who did Musique Concrète, you have Yannis Exan.
And these guys did interesting things, like he had the siren as a musical instrument.
Right, he had the siren.
Mm-hmm. Like, that was pretty cool.
It was pretty cool. I mean, it's pretty wild stuff. I mean, he's a pretty, like, whacked-out guy. So, you know, like,
it's
pretty
punk, isn't it?
It is punk. It's totally punk. Look at Stockhausen. He did a performance with five helicopters.
When was that?
Like, back in the 70s. Like, five helicopters, like, up in the crowd, like, blah, 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 and, like, microphones inside and violinists inside with the whole surround sound system. I mean, people have crazy ideas for music.
Was it at a football stadium, or how
did
you do that?
Yeah, it was, like, in Germany. It's like part of his huge opera, which is the story of creation. And he's only, it's like a 30-act massive sort of production that will probably, he'll die before it's ever fully put on.
And we have a clip here of your opera.
Yeah, well, and what we'll do is we'll jump through it a bit because it's like a half-hour performance. We'll just start with the beginning, which is very quiet, and we'll play a little bit of quiet stuff. And then I'm going to skip forward just with my player here and skip to the bit where the singers come in.
And this is you, Tobias. What's the official name? What's the official name of this track? Maybe you could intro it.
Oh, well, actually, we don't really have it. You know, we just call it, this is a live performance. You know, it's just like a, we don't have a name for the track. We really don't. We just called it live, you know, like a live
performance. What was the reaction?
Stunning. People were stunned. Because, you know, what do people expect? You know, they think, oh, is
how many people were in the audience?
It's about 300 people.
And where was it held? Was it in a neat place?
What yeah,
was it like?
Yeah. It was held at the Society for Arts and Technology, which is like a beautiful new media space. And there were visuals. Like, we worked with a visual artist as well, so there were concurrent visuals on massive screens around the room that went along with what we were.
Was there
doing.
Anybody that didn't like it? Do you ever feel that you're, you know, playing to the converted? You know, people
like
are going to come out to see this stuff, but they like this type of stuff.
Actually,
like, you ever taking this on the road? You know what I mean?
We are looking at taking it on the road. That's one thing.
Like playing it to people that might hate it?
Yeah, well, you know what,
like, because you've never had bad reaction, have you?
Well, no, we have had bad. You know, I've always had bad. You know, there's always been bad reactions to weird stuff. But the audience, though, is not the converted, because this was an opera audience. And, in fact, they consider opera sacred territory. I mean, if you're marching in with laptops or, you know, I mean, it's like destroying, like, the sacred art of opera. So they're very hesitant about all of this. And they were pleasantly surprised because we weren't putting rhythms behind it. So it wasn't like, boom, ch, boom, ch, boom, ch, you know, like that was not the point of this. This is something very meditative. And, you know, we think we're successful because it took them to a very different place. The sort of genre for this stuff, well, I guess you could call it microsound.
And right after that, we're going to follow up with some Venetian
snares, aka Aaron Funk from Winnipeg. Totally different. We're going to go into some hell-raising broken beats.
Canadian content. Not to be confused with opera created by
a number of Canadian composers, which is also
one of which is you, Tobias! Here we go, Tobias.
You're actually listening to a number of records being burnt with small flamethrowers.
Again, you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, KL 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, the Nardwuar Human Survey Radio Show. And that was your composition there, Tobias.
With Thomas Phillips, yes.
A bit of background there. We had you come on live and say that that was the sound of burning vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't actually in the performance. You were saying this is the sound of burning vinyl. This was live on CITR. So we're doing a remix. But can you explain a bit more about that track in case somebody just tuned in?
If you just tuned in, what you heard was actually a live performance between myself and Thomas Phillips on laptops and turntables with two singers from the Montreal Opera. We rewrote the opera script of Richard Strauss, and we did a live performance, improvised live performance with a script.
And records were being burnt, and tea was being served.
Yeah, well, no, tea was the other performance. But this one, yes, involves some record cutting and burning.
Are you one of the few people in the world doing this? Is there anybody else doing this? Has anybody done this with an opera before?
You know, I can't say for sure. Yes, there has been people doing with opera because the whole techno opera thing with Stat and them and the Montreal Opera is like a series of events. So there's other artists involved doing their own sort of performances. So this type of thing has definitely happened before.
And what we were playing too was just the audio version. You were saying that if you were there to perform, you'd see a lot more and hear a lot more and smell a lot more.
I would have smelled the burning vinyl actually, and as well as my skin because I burned the fingertips off. But in fact, the live performance was quite a bit different because you heard the live singer's voice contrast with what was coming out of the speakers, whereas all you heard on the radio was just the speakers.
Soviet France, are you aware of that combo?
Absolutely.
Are they still around? Are they doing similar stuff? Could any comparisons be made to what you're doing in Soviet France?
Yes, I think comparisons could be made. Also, Nurse with Wound.
They're still kicking?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, actually, Nurse with Wound still is cooking. Cooking. Yes, they're cooking. But I don't know about Soviet France anymore. Yeah, I think they've kind of passed on. But, you know, there's other interesting people, too, like Dead Voices on Air, Mark Spivey. This is the whole Vancouver industrial tradition, which is very influential for myself, at least.
QuadrantCrossing.org is your website, right, Tobias?
That's where you can find my blog, as well as a number of other things.
Is there any music up there?
Yeah,
there's noise?
There's music up there. There's some noisy music up there. There's some written stuff up there. There's a whole, like, panoply of net art up there. Actually, I don't know. It's an interesting site. It'll lead you in a number of different directions.
QuadrantCrossing.org, Tobias's website. And you can also check Tobias live on Wednesday night. Is this some of the stuff you're going to be doing on Wednesday night at the Lotus in Vancouver?
It's going to be absolutely
incredible. At the Lotus in Vancouver.
At the Lotus. Lotus.
Where's the Lotus?
The Lotus. Where the hell is the Lotus? It's underneath the Lotus Hotel, of course. Where's the Lotus? Isn't it on...
Well, I mean, I was trying to get, like, a street address.
Is it Abbott or Carroll? You know, I don't remember. I don't know. I haven't been here for 2.5 years. Why do you ask me where the Lotus is? I don't know where the Lotus is.
Well, you got to find your way there.
You have to find your way to the Lotus. It's in downtown Vancouver somewhere, right by Chinatown.
And that's where you'll be.
That's where I'll be on Wednesday night for the Big Trouble Night with Glenn and Farshad and all the rest of the crew. And this is going to be like a mashup night. I'm going to be pulling out late 80s acid house, early 90s tracks, and I'm going to be mashing it up with the sort of new stuff, white labels coming out of Montreal and Barcelona techno.
Well, what's it like when you throw on some of your own stuff and it clears the dance floor? It's quite gutsy to be able to do that, though, isn't it? Like, to throw it on there.
I actually don't throw on anything like this when I'm DJing. It's almost two separate sides to my personality. I have a very conceptual side, which I really like to apply for this type of music. And then when I'm DJing, actually, I use concepts when I'm DJing as well. But for me, DJing is about dancing, and it's about masochism, and it's kind of about oppression.
But couldn't you just throw a bit of this in there for the people that maybe are digging it now?
I could. I don't know if I'd ever actually want to.
So when
Do you know why? Because this type of music isn't a track. Like, I didn't record it nor make it as a track to be played by somebody else. Everything that I do musically is actually designed to be a live performance. I'm very interested in live performance. It's kind of like jazz. It's kind of like Sun Ra or something.
And we mentioned the Venetian snares. I guess we didn't actually get to them, but we're going to get to them right now. A bit more background on Venetian snares and maybe the Canadian electronic music history.
Oh, my God.
Because you're getting into that, aren't you? I mentioned a nihilist spasm band. They're not really part of it. They're more like kind of noise, aren't they? But there's quite a bit going on, like you were saying. Like,
there's a lot going on. Yeah, Montreal's still quite an epicenter of a lot of new composition, independent composition. The whole post-rock scene there is definitely crossed over with the electronic scene. You have the Mutech Festival, which takes place in Montreal. But also here in Vancouver, you have the New Forms Festival, which has really picked up slack in terms of focusing upon experimental moves in Canadian electronic music. You have a bunch of interesting venues that have popped up here in Vancouver, like the Butcher Shop and Blim, nights like Lick, the X Night, Void. You know, from what I understand, the past 2.5 years, things here have really exploded. And you know, kudos to everybody involved with that for actually pushing it, because it's, I think, rejuvenated Vancouver a little bit. But yeah, Venetian Snares. Okay, you can hear some Venetian snares. This guy's
insane. Is it Venetian or Venetian?
V-E-N-E-T-I-A-N. Is that Venetian?
I'm not sure.
Venetian.
I want to say Venetian, but Venetian. Probably not.
Yes, Venetian snares. He's from Winnipeg. Aaron Funk.
And where's his stuff released? Like if somebody wants to get a hold of that. Where do you get a hold of all this stuff? Because if it's on your computer, you obviously don't have the CD.
I got the album from somewhere. You know, you can get this stuff in Zulu or Scratch or whatever. Yeah, definitely. It's distributed.
Well, thanks so much for coming out to the Nardwuar to Human Services show, Tobias. Really appreciate you dropping by, and check you out. Check you out.
Check yourself out. I'll check myself out.
Next Wednesday at the Lotus. Anything else you want to add to the people out there at all? Quadrantcrossing.org? Why should people care about electronic music or noise?
I don't care if people care or not. I just hope that they actually are interested in listening to something. Because in today's world, music appreciation is a dying art.
Well, thanks so much, Tobias. Keep on rocking in a free world, and doot doodle doot doo, beep bloop.